Hello, cricket nuts, and welcome to issue 3 of Andy Zaltzman's World Cricket Podcast. I am Andy Zaltzman. If you cut me open, I bleed cricket. Well, my blood is roughly the same colour as a cricket ball. Does that count?
Andy Zaltzman's World Cricket Podcast.
And what a world cricket is right now. Easily the best world in the world, I'd say, on the evidence of this week's test matches. Pakistan absolutely thrashed Australia in Sydney for 3 days before absolutely thrashing themselves even more absolutely on day four. And in Cape Town, England's 10th wicket pair clung on yet again for the draw, exactly as predicted by no less a soothsayer than me. In my confectionery store blog, written at the end of the first day of the match, when I wrote these exact words, I fully expect Graham Onions to bat England to another fingertip draw in Cape Town on Thursday. So listen up and listen good, because this podcast may contain the absolute truth about the future. It probably won't. That wasn't so much a guess as a joke, but anyway, the point stands. I called it. England hanging on for the draw with one wicket to spare at the end of a test match. It's like London buses. Only four come along in 142 years, and then three turn up in the space of 6 months. It's uncanny. That's right, there were four such rearguards in England's first 886 tests, and now there have been three more in the last eight. So it's gone from 0.45% of all England's tests to 37.5% in the last 6 months. Now I'm telling you, that is a sign of the apocalypse. War, famine, pestilence, earthquakes, false prophets, does Daryl Harper qualify, and a sudden unexplained increase in the regularity of nail-biting test match draws. It's either that, or it's something to do with global warming. I don't know, I'm not a scientist. But England have now drawn 7 of their last 13 tests dating back to Antigua in February. 4 of those draws have gone down to the last wicket, and in another one the West Indies clang on in Port of Spain with just 2 wickets left. And of the 6 games that have resulted in a result, so to speak, and excluding draws, which are themselves, I guess, a result, although not for the purposes of this sentence, which is rapidly getting out of control, of the 6 games that were won or lost, 3 have been by an innings, 1 by 10 wickets, and 2 by over 100 runs, which all goes to show that draws are now much more exciting than positive results. And what Test cricket needs is far more draws. There, I've said it.
How's that? That's how.
Amongst the talking points arising from Cape Town were, number one, is it logistically possible for Graham Smith to play an elegant shot? Physics suggests not. Smith is, without question, a very good batsman. He's skillful, powerful, cussed, and he delivers when it really matters as often as a top-grade midwife. But he does all that whilst looking like he's trying to open a can of tomatoes with a sledgehammer. Number two, Ian Bell coming of age, for the third time in his last 4 tests. A crucial first inning 70 at the Oval, a superb 140 in Durban, and a match-saving 5-hour rearguard at Newlands. Pretty good work for a supposed bottler. Three, the ball-tampering allegations for Argo all arose when Stuart Broad gently trapped a moving ball under the sole of his boot. Andrew Strauss said that it probably looked worse than it was, and given that it didn't look bad, it probably wasn't bad. If anything, Broad looked like he was trying to trap a worm under his foot without killing it, so he could put it in Jack Callis's dinner-time spaghetti as a prank, just to see if he could make him smile. And judging by the movement of the supposedly tampered ball, if England were tampering with it, well, they need to practice their tampering harder, because it had less effect than Chris Martin's batting coach. That's a joke for all you New Zealand tail-enders fans out there. Number four, the umpire review system, which next week will officially be renamed the Daryl Harper umpire nannying system. It's much improved on its previous incarnation, but still flawed. And it has also added to the encyclopedia of needless delays that are currently blighting cricket, alongside bad light, umpires talking about bad light, players badgering umpires to talk about bad light, rotating sight screens that inevitably break, batsmen with 125 separate mannerisms before facing each ball, general dawdling, drinks breaks, lunch, tea, the close of play, night time and bedtime. Number 5, Dale Steyn's spell to Paul Collingwood. Quality cricket, certainly the best spell of 0-13 I've seen for a while. 6, the mental strength of England, which enabled them to hang on for a draw, which was, of course, made possible only by the mental weakness that saw them collapse twice on a flat pitch in the second innings after tossing their wickets away in the first. It can be a very fine line between what the media praises heroic resistance and what they slam as gutless surrender. A line as fine as the inch between the penultimate ball of the match and Graham Onions' gloves. Number 7, Paul Collingwood's slow scoring resistance. 40 off 188 balls. That's 21 runs per 100 balls faced. And out of all the innings of 40 or more in England's Test history for which the number of balls faced has been recorded, and that, my stats guru worshipping friends, is 2,141 innings, Collingwood's was the 11th slowest of all time. Collingwood has been a key man in all three of England's recent escapes, scoring a total of 140 runs for twice out from 532 balls spread over 13 hours at the crease in those three nail-biting draws. Now that is the kind of batting I used to dream of when I was a boy. I would kiss my Chris Tavares poster goodnight and drift off into blissful slumber, hoping that that night I might in my sleep score 35 in 5.5 hours, just like my hero Tavares did in the Chennai Test of January 1982. In reality, it sometimes got even better than that for me. I once scored 6 in 1.25 hours, and 4 of them were an edge between the wicketkeeper and first slip. So, in fact, for my liking, Collingwood's innings was a little bit cavalier. Now, this leads into a new feature. Dull moments in cricket history. Now, if you think Collingwood's innings were slow, try running that idea past the poor, godforsaken souls who had to watch South Africa v England back in 1956-57. This was the slowest scoring test series of all time. 1.79 runs per over, over 5 tests. And bear in mind that the legendary South African stodgemaster, Jackie Magloo, only played one test due to a mix of a shoulder injury, a coma induced by watching himself bat, and a pathological fear of zebras that was heightened by the stripy face paint that England bowler Johnny Wardle wore during that series. In fact, Magloo was so boring as a batsman that his career statistics were used by pioneering surgeon Christian Barnard as an anaesthetic in the world's first heart transplant operation in 1967. But the slow-scoring star of that series back in the 50s was Trevor Bailey. Not only did the Barnacle blast his merry way to 259 runs during the 1,400 fun-packed minutes he spent at the crease during those tests, but he also conceded just 1.22 runs per over as a bowler. Schoolchildren at the time were advised only to watch Bailey bat through a mirror, for fear that if they looked at him blocking with the naked eye, they would turn to stone. Miraculously, both cricket and humanity survived the ordeal of the 1956-57 series. To Australia now, and in Sydney, a remarkable test match ended with a spectacular win for the home team, as Pakistan imploded like the cricketing supernova that they are. Now, I know since this podcast began way back in, when was it, December 2009, I've been promising you other people than me on the show. Well, you'll get it next time. I did come a bit closer this time, though. Australian comedian and fellow cricket lunatic Justin Hamilton couldn't come on the show due to his travel commitments, but he did email me some thoughts on the momentous Sydney Test, which I will now read out in my best Australian accent. So you can imagine that it's him actually saying it, and you can hear the real Justin Hamilton next time, or the time after that, availability permitting.
The view from down under. Having smashed the West Indies 1-0, and now taking a commanding 2-0 lead over Pakistan, Australia is ready to reclaim its number one ranking in the world. Not only have we smashed the 6th and 8th ranked test teams in the world, but idiot man-child Ricky Ponting has shown that while he may balk at a rising delivery, he will never have problems with smashing an opinion over extra cover. On the opening day of the second test against Pakistan, Ponting looked at the green pitch and realised it would be perfect to bowl, so immediately chose to bat. Were these the demons of Edgbaston 05 coming back to haunt Ponting as he dared not choose to bowl? What are you talking about, he said. I'm not some kind of Sheila, he remarked as he walked back to the pavilion. Well, he certainly isn't, and Ponting choosing to bat first only proved what many people had thought before. Australians are born with two red gleaming balls. Subsequently, when Australia was bowled out in the first innings for 127, Ponting was still looking on the bright side. Well, at least Watson didn't get out in the 90s again, he chuckled. Well, the pitch was seeming one way and another, flip-flopping like a child caught with his hand in the cookie jar, trying desperately to think of a last-second excuse to get him out of trouble. There was no way Pakistan could bat on this wicket. The nation waited for them to be bowled out for no more than 5 runs. 333 runs later, Ponting still hadn't blinked. This is why Test match cricket is the best and most exciting cricket in the world, he yelled to the literally tens of people attending the match. This might be the best side I've ever captained against, he continued. We have a battle ahead of us, but as Diggers used to say, what the hell am I doing in France? I just signed up to meet Mel Gibson. Now the following day, the Aussies took their mark against the fearsome bowling attack of Pakistan. As Watson was dismissed for 97, Ponting chuckled, now that's more like it. With Mr. Jimmy Cricket Michael Hussey making an unbeaten 134, and Australia all out for 381, the Aussies knew they were in the box seat with a lead of 175 big ones. When asked about the many chances Pakistan gave him by dropping him three times in his innings, all Hussey could say was, I'm just happy to be out with my mates. Has there ever been anyone more true blue than Mike Hussey? On day four, all Pakistan had to do was survive the blistering spin bowling of Nathan Horitz. Forget the spin kings of Warne, McGill and that other guy from the 80s. Horitz is the man they all fear. With his gentle tweakers and suggestion of spin, Horitz unravelled the greatest enemy Australia had ever faced on a test pitch and dispatched them back to the Middle Ages. Well, now it was Ponting's turn with the journalists. Put up your hand if you said it was a mistake to bowl first, he said. Go on, I dare you, I double dare you. None of you want to admit it, but I'm the king around here and I'm better than all of you. You suck. Ah, Ponting, you've done it again. How great it is to be back on top as the number one cricketing nation in the entire universe. And when we say number one, we mean number three, by a whisker over Sri Lanka. But whatever, we're the best. Stuff those rankings. So there. The words of Justin Hamilton. And if you want to cast me in an Australian part in any feature film you're making, please contact my agent. And for more about Justin, check out his website, justinhamilton.com.au. And as I say, we'll hope to speak to him in the next podcast. Another thing Ricky Ponting said in his post-victory glow was, I don't think anyone in the world, other than the blokes inside our dressing room, thought we could win. Ricky, that is simply not true. I think most people in the world would have just looked at the name of the opposing team and thought, well, it's Pakistan. Anything can happen. Even with Australia effectively 30-odd for 8 in the second innings, seasoned Pakistan watchers would have thought, this is a 50-50 game at best. No other team in world cricket could have pulled that defeat out of the bag.
Splat! It's the Zolstat!
Since regaining the Ashes at the start of 2007, incidentally, Ricky Ponting has a lower batting average than Daniel Vettori. In that time, Vettori has also taken 84 more wickets than Ponting's no wickets. In fact, including only players that have played 5 tests or more in the last 3 years, the baggy green captain is the 41st best averaging batsman in the world, behind the likes of Misbah-ul-Haq, Ravi Bopara and Neil McKenzie. And Nathan Horitz taking 5 wickets in a first-class innings, that's another thing that's like London buses. You wait 28 years for him to do it, and then he does it successively in back-to-back tests. Horitz has now taken 47 wickets at average 30 in his 12 tests. In his other 43 first-class games, he's taken just 76 wickets at an average of 50, meaning that statistically, he raises his game on the big occasion more than any other cricketer in history. Probably the biggest of big-time Charlies. He's certainly silencing some critics, the wonder from Wandai. What an appropriate birthplace for an Australian bowler who had to wait so long for his success. Wandai, Wandai, Wandai. He's now taken more wickets in his first 12 tests than the following legends of spin bowling. Shane Warne, Daniel Vettori, Abdul Qadir, Richie Beno, Ian Salisbury, Bishan Bedi, Hedley Verity, Kevin Peterson and Russell Arnold. So the two test series are now heading towards their climaxes, and here are the two things that I would most like to see happen in the final tests. Firstly, since it's now a dead third test between Australia and Pakistan, I'd like the Aussies to pick Don Bradman. Dig him up, put his coffin on casters, strap a bat to it, push him out to the crease, wait till he snicks a boundary, then let him retire hurt, very hurt, with his average bunted up to 100. And in the final South Africa-England game, I want to see England clinch another last wicket draw, just to see the look on Graham Smith's face. Nothing personal, but if Graham Onions blocks out the last few overs again, I can quite easily envisage Smith charging after him with a knife and fork, screaming, "Let me win my game, or I will eat you! I'll cook you, Onions, and then I'll eat you!" All in all, in terms of the overall hierarchy of Test nations, all the teams in action over the past couple of weeks have shown strengths and weaknesses, so India have probably extended their lead as cricket's top dogs without actually playing. So that's about it for this edition of the World Cricket Podcast. Thanks again to Justin Hamilton for his contribution. Next time there will definitely be a real guest. Maybe even two. Honestly, I wouldn't lie to you, would I? In the meantime, long live cricket. And I'll play you out with some new bits of cricketing jargon. Bye-bye and thanks for listening. A Wenceslas. But Wenceslas's a confident LBW appeal surprisingly turned down by the umpires, so called because, like good King Wenceslas in the famous Christmas song, it looked out. A divorcing wife. A divorcing wife is an outswinger that carries on swinging after it passes the batsman, because it left him and then it moved further away. Chased by a giant wolf means wrongly given out by an umpire, in other words, dismissed by a massive howler.